appreciate it. I have a clock here too, so okay. I just thank you for the opportunity, Dr. Payne, to be here, and just appreciate what our Nehemiah professor like him do on our campuses all across the country. And we need to elevate church planting because it is one of the greatest ways to reach people for Jesus Christ with the gospel. And so thank you for being here. Your being here tells me that you have a heart for lost people, and you have a heart to learn how to reach them in their settings and where they live. And I made God a promise, and I'll always try to keep it. And if I would leave here today, get on my plane this afternoon, and fly back to my family down in Holly Springs, north of Atlanta, I would have failed because most important thing for me is when I came to know Jesus, and I made God a promise that I would always give my testimony anywhere I go. And I just want to give you just a brief word on how I came to know Jesus so you get to know a little bit about me and who I am. But I came to know Jesus when I was 17 years old, a senior in high school, and didn't grow up in a Christian home. I was a bus kid, actually. I was bused to church back in those days when buses were the big thing, and we had a big blue bus, and you got a dollar if you sat on the right seat with a number. And but as a senior in high school, I was searching for purpose and meaning in my life, and I was lonely. And I think that's a thread that cuts through multi-housing, no matter whether it's the up and out or the down and out. People are lonely, and they need to belong, and most of all, they need to belong to Jesus. And it was in reading John's Gospel as I was searching in my bedroom, just me, the Bible, and God's Spirit. I got to John chapter 15. I'd had a godly grandma and grandpa had been praying for me. But when I got to John chapter 15, where it says, "Greater love is no man than this, that a man lay down his life for his friends, and you're my friends if you do whatever I command you." When I read that verse, the light bulbs came on, and I understood that Jesus died for me, and not only my Savior, not only my Lord, but He'd be my friend. And it's there, I face my pillow, Jesus saved me, and I know He did. And then He took me on a journey that's led me into being a summer missionary, journeyman missionary, pastor, church planter, and mostly in Illinois. My time in Missouri at Southwest Baptist and Midwestern Seminary, and I'm currently doing a doctoral project here. I'm in the project phase. I've got all my seminars done, so now I'm one day I'll be able to say I'm an alumni too. So hopefully, right, JD? Okay, yes. But I just am so grateful for what God has done in my life. And the second best thing that's ever happened to me was. It'd be 8 years, May 20th, and we have three boys. Andy, who's 16, so pray for me on that one. And pray for Dana, my wife back home. And then Noah, 15, and Luke, who's 11. And three little redheads that God has blessed us with and bring a lot of energy and life to our home. And so I just, that's a little bit about who I am. I've just recently come to the North American Mission Board, where I had served previously for 7 years at the state. As a church planning strategist, and as a planning strategist, I did general work. I was we did Cowboy Church in Illinois. We did the traditional church plants. We did house church. We did multi-housing. We had several multi-housing sites. I did ethnic work, did a lot of Hispanic work. I've been a journeyman in Mexico, in Monterrey, Mexico, and have a heart for Hispanics. Korean, just Japanese church. Illinois is very diverse culturally, like states are. But Chicago especially. So that's a little bit about where I'm coming from. And so let's just dive right into our topic for today, multi-housing. Chris McNary, Neil Hughes are two names, and you'll see their pictures. I've incorporated them into the presentation. But they're two guys that I'm very grateful for because at the North American Mission Board, they have paid the way. They were my predecessors. And I always tell Neil, I hope that I can be the life. Neil's one of my mentors. Neil had started Community of Hope in Alabama, Montgomery, Alabama, a multi-housing site that started 55 sites, and many of them ended up being churches, congregations. And Neil has been a good friend and a mentor and continues to be. He serves in another capacity at NAM now, and we work together. But Chris McNary was kind of the forerunner at NAM who went out there as a John the Baptist and prepared the way to raise the awareness of multi-housing and the fact that multi-housing needs to be addressed throughout our continent. And it is a very common strategy in the foreign field, but here at home we've not incorporated this strategy like we ought to. And Chris came up with a thing that was his voice. the nation as he would go around and speak. He would talk about we're on the wrong side of the boat. And you know the story from Peter and the guys as they were caught anything all night long. And Jesus told them, you're fishing on the wrong side, on the right side. And and there was a great catch of fish. And then Peter fell at Jesus' feet and said, depart from me, for I'm a sinner. And his life was changed. He was going to fish for men from then on. Well, can you imagine being out fishing and you are casting your rod and reel and you're trying to catch and a lot of our churches, and I don't ever hear me say today that the traditional church is gone by the way or we'll never have, we need our legacy churches. I like Felicity Dale's terminology, legacy churches. We need those churches. But we also need the non-traditional kind of churches that you're going to hear about today that reach people for Christ in a way that actually is more effective, cost-effective. You have a low overhead. You don't have to have a building in most cases. Maybe you have to have baptism because a lot of the housing sites have swimming pools already. It's lay-driven, and it is a common-sense, wise way to reach people for Christ and start new churches, ministries and congregations, both. And but our churches, many of our churches are fitting, I believe, the wrong side of the boat. In multi-housing church planting, they would begin to reap a harvest of where the pools of fish are. And if our activities would be directed in that way, and I'm going to give you some hints, I pray, today that will help you to do that. So let's fish on the right side of the boat. And that's what we're going to look at today. Readiness, the church planning process. I've developed this 4 sessions for us today based on the church planning process that we use at North American Mission, no matter whether it's ethnic work, whether it's a multi-housing, purpose, whatever model church plant we're looking at. 4 components to this, and this is the first one, the readiness component. And the second one is the enlistment. We'll cover that later. And the third one is the equipping. And the fourth one is the new church strengthening and reproduction element. And those 4 processes continue on in a church plant. And they're biblical. You'll see that they're biblical in this as we look at it. But we're going to talk about readiness, awareness that leads to awareness. A lot of folks drive by multi-housing. They don't realize, I think, one of the eye-openers for you today when you see how many people literally live in multi-housing and how vast the scope of it is. As I've come to the North American Mission Board, and Richard Harris, our Vice President for Church Planning, told me, he made this statement to me, he said, you have on your shoulders the multi-housing of North America. And when that hit me, I thought, wow, I need God to help. We need God's sovereignty, we need his blessing, we need his favor, we need to be so on his agenda and so on his page to see this happening. But I believe this could be the component, this could be the venue, the avenue that we see the great awakening that we all been praying for in this nation and Canada for years. Because it's like low-hanging fruit. It's so ripe and so ready, and we just need to mobilize the people to get out there and to be ready. Here has become a life verse for me in terms of my ministry and my life verse for my salvation. I shared it with you. This is Romans 16:3-5. And it says, greet Priscilla and Aquila, my fellow workers in Christ Jesus, who risked their own necks for my life, to whom not only I give thanks, but also all the churches of the Gentiles. Likewise, greet the church that is in your house. Now, there's several things in this, and we're not going to drill down too deep into this, but these are I'm praying for as a national missionary that the housing arena, the nation, happen. Aquila and Priscilla, lay people. We need lay people to be engaged in church planting. We need them to get out of the people and out of the 4 walls of the church into where the people are. In fact, remember as a child, here's the church, there's the steeple, open up the doors, and what? Here's all the people. Now, I think you all, many of you are theological students. You've had a lot of training in theology and understanding of ecclesiology. Is this the church? This is the church. That's a building. And the church is the people. and the people of God, everyday Christ followers, the laity, is the old traditional term we've used, it's not us, the Greek word, the people of God. Where two or three are gathered, Jesus is there in the midst. And we've got to change our thinking and realize that the people need to go to the high-rises, to the mobile home parks. You know, these are the buildings. And see that we need to have the people of God be the people of God in those settings, in those strategic places. So another thing in this is they risk their own neck. There's Dr. Dan Morgan down at Southwestern Seminary has kind of coined a phrase that I like. He says, a faith risk. These people, Aquila and Priscilla, were people that risked their own necks. Sometimes there's actual physical risk in multi-housing work. Some places where we do is dangerous to be physically in some of the areas of our country. But there's financial risk. There's risk. There's all kinds of risks that come involved. But when you're in the center of God's will, that's the safest, best place to be. And you know that God's going to protect you. And then also, not only to whom I give thanks, I believe that God has called me, but also the church is a Gentile. I believe God's called me to raise the level of multi-housing and to help people realize it's a legitimate way to give thanks that God is reaching people through multi-housing. Because you see, the last part of this is we need to understand that the church can meet in somebody's house. The church that met in their house. It's the only place in the Bible that it says that, and you'll see this today. But this is my life verse for multi-housing. Four things that I'm praying that God will use me to engage the laity and help people to get out of the boat, take the risk, and get out there where the fruit is, and then also legitimize, help people understand that multi-housing is a way to reach people for Christ and start new churches, and then also to give people the knowledge and the ways, the abilities to be able to start a church in their house. We need to hear the cries of those who live in multi-housing. You're close enough to St. Louis that probably in the last year you heard about Sean Hornbeck, who was held captive in an apartment for years. I remember when that boy was heard it on the news, and we were looking all over for him in the St. Louis area. You probably heard in East St. Louis about a woman who was stabbed, and the baby was ripped out of her stomach, and the other two children were put in a dryer, and that was in an apartment complex in East St. Louis where this happened. That's just from my area where I served. Those kind of cries are going out all over the country. All kinds of things, all kinds of evil are happening in apartments and multi-housing settings all across. And I believe we've got to, spiritual ears and with our eyes, we need to hear and see the cries and see the need of the people that are in multi-housing. And be not just see for having a little pity, but it's actually doing something about it and getting out to where the people are. So let this be core to who we are, that we hear the cries of the people that live in multi-housing. In fact, I read an article in Newsweek about Sean Hornbeck, and the people that lived in the apartment heard the whimpering and the crying coming from his room, but none of them did anything or acted upon it. And so hear the cries of the people. This is from The Message, Eugene Peterson's. You know the verse... And I, there at the bottom, you see it, where it says, they were overlooked and ignored. That's multi-housing. Church community, we are, by and large, overlooking and ignoring people that live in these kind of settings. And Chuck Kelly from New Orleans made this statement, and I thought this would be worse than being lost. It's being lost and nobody's looking for you. That sink in a little bit. What is multi-housing? This is my definition of it as I'm researching and trying to hone it down. I was doing it in Illinois, but I never defined it. But multi-housing is multiple family communities. It's a very simple definition of it. And then to break it down just a little more, they may be attached or in close proximity with shared amenities and regulations. And that's what holds it all together, the shared amenities or the shared regulations. And the fact that they're clustered communities of people. Isn't that very New Testament, that communities? And we'll see later how the gospel, that's how the gospel travels, through households, through communities, through networks, relationships. And that's why multi-housing is so huge and something we need to be leveraging in a big way. Now, multi-housing may look like this, apartment complex. Apartments all laid out there. I find myself using the word complex because people that live in apartments don't have a complex. They're normal, but, you know, that's maybe part of our terminologies. Multi-housing may look like this. That's in Chicago. Flew by on the way up here. Condominiums. You know, these are the up and outs. And in Florida and other all across our country, this is becoming the housing of choice for people. No grass to cut, you know. Multi-housing may look like this. This is Daniels Island off of South Carolina. And it's a whole island that's been developed around, and again, the shared amenities, the clustering, there's a community there. And the developer who helped develop that is a Christian man, a Southern Baptist man, who I've got connected with in the last few months. I'm praying that he's going to help me to get some inroads into the industry. So it's not a place I could afford to live. But that this is a place where I lived. This is Holiday Shores near Edwardsville, Illinois. It's a lake community. You can't really see the houses, but I had to have a picture in there. That's a lake community. It's a lake association. And they have a clubhouse, and they have a ski club. And the neat thing about our church plant there, folks would come to church on Sunday nights, and they'd come in their shorts and their wet hair, coming right off their boats. You know, and when we'd have baptisms, I baptized two of my boys at that lake. And when we'd have baptisms, people stopped their boats, and they'd watch us baptize. But we were a community. We were a multi-housing community. And we had a commonality there with all kinds of activities that drew us to a place where the gospel could spread and go. Another one is manufactured housing. That's the political correct terminology. We know them as mobile home parks. I lived in one of those for a while when I was single, and I know all about living in that kind of setting. And we've done a lot of ministry in those in Illinois, and they're places where people live. It's not a place you want to be when there's a tornado, but my grandma and grandpa lived in a mobile home, and I got this. They're both in heaven now, and I've got this little like home. And so that's a special thing to me. But these are people that have needs, and they're people who need Jesus Christ. Public housing communities, some where it's partially subsidized, some where it's fully subsidized. That's multi-housing. Another one is assisted living or senior housing communities, nursing homes. When I was associate pastor, I needed to preach because I'd been a church planter prior to that, but I needed do ministry, and at one time I had three nursing homes going on at the same time doing services. There's a fellow in Mississippi who started a Sunday morning service at a nursing home in Mississippi, and he began to reach the families of the residents that lived there, and they were all meeting. They weren't going to church anywhere, and they all just kind of collectively said to one another, well, why don't we become a church here? And they became an actual church. Wouldn't that be a wonderful thing if we saw that happening and they had their senior adults? And America's graying. We're headed that direction. We need to be thinking about how we reach our seniors in the future. Collegiate housing. My, isn't this been in the news? Virginia Tech? Collegiate housing, dorm life. And yes, that's BCM, Baptist Collegiate Ministries. But yet we have many church planters that are going in there with a focus to try to reach collegians and have a collegiate. In fact, Illinois, we just had called a person who their part of their responsibility is collegiate church planting and trying to do stuff for college campuses that have that flair and flavor about it. Gated communities falls into multi-housing. These are the up and outs, and how these people, you know, there's sometimes they cocoon, they come to hide away, and they don't want people in. That's why they got the gate. We found that tutoring sometimes that meets a need that they have, and they'll allow you to. There's lots of ways to get in, but we're still trying to break the code on this one. Marinas, this is one that's kind of an unusual one. Most folks don't have this, but there are places where people live in their boats, and that's their community. That's multi-housing. This is in Canada. I didn't want to leave out our Canadian friends. This is in Canada. That's Calgary, and that's an old military base that they've made into a live, work, and play community. It's where everything is self-contained, and that's the big trend now in the multi-housing world is live, work, and play communities where everything is just all right there at your fingertip. And go to a restaurant, or you can walk down and go to a movie, or you can walk down and it's all right there at hand. And again, it's more of the up and outs, but Midtown Atlanta is one of the best examples of that, and I'll show you a church planter that's starting one in Midtown Atlanta later. Here's the four categories that the multi-housing breaks down. as the industry. This is the industry standards. This is the government. This is how they view it as well. And basically, this D level is being phased out throughout the land. You're seeing them tearing them down, in fact, I don't have this in my presentation, but you might write down this. This is one of these seminary words. This is one of these $18 words. Okay, this is regentrification. Have you ever heard that terminology? Do you know what it means? What it literally means is they come into communities and they just, in the urban centers, and they just tear down all the public housing or all the old housing that's there and replace it with very high level, the A kind of stuff, the upper income stuff, and change the whole face of the community. It's happening in every major city. It's happening all over the country where this is the trend now. And these people are being pushed out to the suburbs, are being pushed into whole other regions of a state, because that's just where we're at with that. And people are willing to pay that, and they're changing the whole landscape of the downtown areas. A lot of our new towns that have baseball stadiums that have been just recently built, they build the whole communities. It's part of an urban redevelopment or regentrification that happens in those areas. Middle income, that's the mixed use. That's like Holiday Shores. That's like places like that are more the middle income. Some mobile home parks would fit into that, retirement communities. Partially subsidized is where the government helps with some of the rent for the apartments and through the HUD and through those fair housing type things. So that's how the industry sees it. This is a sample of one of the lobbyists, one of the key secular agencies that deal with multi-housing, the National Multi-Housing Council. And I have just a PowerPoint I want to just really zip through that's given by them, and I want to highlight something in it. It's got a real cool feature I like about it. It's a free PowerPoint but I pulled it off their site, and I'm going to show it to you just real quick here. And it is the big thing now in the industry is green spaces, getting away from urban sprawl and having green spaces where we're not just tearing up the cities. And so just let me show you this very quickly and zip right through this PowerPoint. There's some numbers and stats that they have, and we'll get some of these later, but I just want you to see that. Look at this 67 million. You know, we know we've got to have church with population growth. 94 more million people than there were in 2000. Homes don't exist yet. Growth, choices, opportunity, sprawling, low-density growth, commutes, long commutes, all that kind of good stuff. Atlanta, classic for that. Need a new model. Green space, again, that's the biggie. Critical ingredient is high-density, well-planned kind of thing. These are the planners. These are the people that are setting the plans for the future for multi-housing. Well-designed density, that's the big thing. Not looking like this, but looking like this. This is a cool feature I like with this. See how they change it? Transform it into that. Now, that's a cool PowerPoint, isn't it? Okay. Here's another one. Before and after. That's multi-housing, folks. Right there. And that's how fast it's growing across our country. The benefits of density. Good density can do all this good stuff. Now, this is not my PowerPoint. I just want you to see it. Okay. Married couples. The empty nesters, single parents, senior citizens. This is good because this tells you where we're headed as a country. These are the people that are moving into multi-housing. And these are not your typical, stereotypical, oh, you think multi-housing, it's all the poor people. Well, yes, it is. And we've got to reach out to the poor. But we've got to do both. It's both and. They create demand for all these things that we're talking about today. 6 out of 10, it's a choice. They want to do it. They want to live in these kind of places. 40% of apartment residents. I think as I get older, that's maybe the kind of place I like to live. No grass to cut and, you know, low overhead, all that kind of stuff. Okay. Now, here's the point I want to make. Well, this urban sprawl, there's a good example. That looks like Arizona to me. Now, here's the point I really want to make for this. Okay, everybody has a role to play. Three slices of the pie. Business leaders, citizens, environmentalists, elected officials. Three slices of the pie. And he talks about each slice of the pie. And I'm not going to get you that. Now, the question I have for you as I do my transition to my other here, what's missing? The church. The church. And why is the church missing? Because we've overlooked, we've ignored them, we don't have foresight. Where there's no vision, the people perish. I mean, we've got to cast a vision for multi-housing as Southern Baptists, as a kingdom people, as the church. It's okay to do overseas, but, you know, how about here? That's both and. And so the church is the missing partner. And I would pray we'd have the day, we could see the day when the developers and the planners are planning in the places for the church. And that's just a part of their planning process, and they see us as a valid partner at the table, and that we're salt and light impacting the community like we ought to be, and seeing the culture change and transform. So that's my prayer. I just wanted to show you that little embedded PowerPoint. North American population. This number is changing. You can go to the website and see where it's at. It's different. I imagine it's different since I printed this. But I'm going to give you some statistics, and I'm going to qualify these statistics because most of the multi-housing statistics that we have been anecdotal when it comes to those that are unreached. And but intuitively, I know they're right, and I'm begging Ed Stetzer to do a study on it from NAM so we can get some hard data. The numbers on how many live in it, you can find that. It's out there. There's no doubt. And just you know in your mind, all the places I showed you that qualify as multi-housing, you're going to realize it's huge. Because 57% is the number that we have of people that live in multi-housing. Now, that could be less, and let's just say 50%. That's a lot of people. Because if you break it down by the 57% number, and that's the number that all the leaders in the ministry, all the leaders, and that's an industry number as well, Barbara Odin from Texas reminds us. But this translates into a multi-housing population of 190 million. So I generally say about 180 is when I'm out there talking. But I ran those numbers for Canada and North America in that way. 190 people. Now, this is the biggie. This is the eye-opener. The number that we've heard is that 96% are unchurched. Now, this came out of a 2001 study that was done. And so 96%. But we found that if we'll go to them and we'll do ministry on site, we can reach them. And the problem is we don't have enough churches that are going to them. We've got the y'all come. And I'm learning the Southern culture now, and it's y'all. Now, from the north, where I was from, Yankee, it's you guys. Now, I'm from Southern Illinois, and I say both. I'll be you guys, y'all. But I don't even say y'all right, because you got to say y'all. You don't say the, you know, I've been translated in that. And that's our mentality as church. Put up the sign, y'all come, the attractional model, everybody comes. We've got to have a missional model where we go to where they're at and reach them. And these statistics I've heard, that 27% will stick in our churches if we try to get them to come through bus ministry, what have you, invitation. But if we'll go do something on site where they're at, the number jumps up to 76% assimilation, sticking, retention, staying with it. So, if they won't come to church, then we'll take it to them. Tilly Bergen is the Mother Teresa of Southern Baptists. She is the one who has brought the church to the people in a great way. She is the model that everybody needs to go see. I think that's, you know, you see it. This is Tilly. And she's just, that's why I say, just she's when she's there at Mission Arlington, people just flock to her, and she's magnetic and has the attraction of Jesus in her because she is a godly woman who loves Jesus. They, the just the short version of the story at Mission Arlington is today, the last word I heard, 252 congregations in Arlington, just Arlington. They focus on Arlington alone. They meet in apartments, mobile home parks, anything that's multi-housing, anywhere they can get. Their statement is they hang out and they hover around John 3:16. And they go there. They don't worry about counting them. There's some that are actually affiliated with their local association and their state convention, but they're just out there to reach people for Jesus. And their strategy is very, very, very spiritually minded. It's like we've got to go to them and reach them with the gospel and see their lives changed and gather people and community. and it's been exponential. And they have three city blocks or four that they've taken over downtown, and they have all kinds of ministries going on to all kinds of people. It's just incredible. And I just want to, she's kind of one of the forerunners, and I'm going to highlight some of the people that I think in the nation are doing some of the leading edge stuff in multi-housing, and a lot of them come from Texas. Barbara Oden, as I mentioned her name earlier about these studies, but she, one thing that I've learned from Barbara, she says, find out where their needs are and let's be resident-driven, not church-driven. Many times we go to the multi-housing sites and we've got our agenda and our plan, and we don't ever ask them what they need. And we need to ask them what they need. And here's a picture of Barbara just to give you a personal look at who she is. And she has some good stuff on the web. Her web page is on the handout I've given for you. Daniel Sanchez, Hispanic work. In Houston, they have done all kinds of stuff with multi-housing. I didn't have a picture of Daniel, but Daniel's a leader in multi-housing. Stan Dobbs is Apartment Life. Apartment Life is an industry-driven approach. They go to the managers, the industry, and they say, we can help you save $138,000 a year in each apartment by keeping retention and quality of life up, by having care teams come in. And if you'll provide a room for them to live, we'll have them work 20 hours a week doing activities and ministries. You know, they're very careful. They're wise as serpents and gentle as doves as they handle this. But they get the people embedded in there to do the ministry. And it's a great strategy to get church planners in there, because what is one of the hardest things for church planners is the housing cost, getting them a place to live. And we have Apartment Life, and here's a picture of Stan. They're doing it in Texas and Colorado, just beginning in Colorado, and doing it in Georgia, and just beginning in New York. And so they could come to a city near you, because this is beginning to really take off in a great way. And again, he's from Texas too. I don't know if this Texas multi-housing is the mecca for it. Let's go a little further south here, the Midtown Bridge, Atlanta, Georgia. That's Larry Grays. He is a full-time youth evangelist, speaking many of our state conventions, and God has led him to plant a church, Woodstock, in Georgia. Their church, Johnny Hunt, where he's pastor there, is a sponsoring church, and he is planting. That's a live, work, and play community behind you, and there's about 40,000 people plus that live in that very high-density setting, and I love going to visit their church. Our family is going to have one leg in a church plant, and this is the church plant, and another leg in another church, and also I'm going to be trying to be involved in starting one at River Park that's near where I live. And so this is Larry, a church planter that's doing it right now in the field. Great guy. This is Bobby Dean. He's a state director of missions in Colorado, and Bobby's a little fuzzy there on my picture, but it's the best I can do with him. But you can see the mountains in the background there, and multi-housing is everywhere in Colorado, Denver, and other places in Colorado Baptist. They've started a missional network, and I'm very excited about this, because this is a network of people with like-mindedness coming together, and there's a spiritual synergy that's going on. Meeting God's doing video to raise awareness. They've got Apartment Life working with them. They've got a lot of different angles going on at the same time, and I see God. We're going to hear a lot from Colorado with multi-housing. Scotty Brewer, I'm going to be there next weekend with them, and Scotty's the guy that's doing, the reason I have him up there is because he's doing reproduction. He's got like six sites going on right now, and he's mentoring guys, and Mission Raleigh is what they're calling it, and Scotty is the kind of guy, if he can't get into a community, he got rejected from, and that's usually not the norm. Most communities want you to come in and do something. They are begging you. But Scotty got rejected at this one community, and he went around and hung out by the dumpster and just talked to people. And pretty soon, from talking to him, he found out what their needs were. And it wasn't very long after that, he got into that community and started doing ministry. He started doing driver education with the teenagers that live in low-income multi-housing, and he became the hero. I mean, he's just like, hey, he says himself, he's the church's worst nightmare when it comes to liabilities. So, so anyway, that's Scotty. Community Hope down in Montgomery, Alabama. Kathy Hall's down there ministering, and this is what Neil had started. And 55 congregations in multi-housing go down there and visit. And in a city where racial tensions were, that's what they're known for, Montgomery. Black, white churches in multi-housing settings, and they're working together, the leaders that he's reproduced himself in, as Neil's done this work here. This is Chris McNary, and Chris is now at NAM, and he still at NAM, but he moved into a role where he works with the Western States. And then this is Neil Hughes, who now, the guy I mentioned before, who had my mentor, and Neil is now a field rep for the Eastern Region. And he's also president of the Multi-Housing Association until August. And this is a Southern Baptist organization that meets every year. And in fact, they're having a conference call even as we speak right now. I couldn't be with them on that call today. But we have leaders from all over the country, and we're planning a big conference in New York, and I'll tell you a little bit more about that. It's going to be in August, and it's a great, they have one every year, and they combine it with the ministry time, and it's real hands-on. It's good stuff. But Neil is a great brother and a good mentor, and Neil is a leader in multi-housing. Now, let me just give you this real quick. Holy indicators of God's activity in the multi-housing world. I've had him in my church to speak when I was a church planter, and I keep crossing paths with him all the time, and he's been kind of a distance mentor for me, and I'm very thankful for how God has used him in my life. And many of you have been touched by Henry's ministry in that way. But here's some things I see God at work. Multi-housing communities are more open than ever before to the gospel. By hands down, they are wide open fields. Wide open door, like Paul said in Corinthians, that there's a wide open door. Multi-housing is the fastest growing real estate, and it's the preferred choice of housing. And I just demonstrated that by that PowerPoint we went through quickly. Multi-housing management and corporations have put out the welcome mat for the church to come and begin new work. I mean, it is, they are, the management and corporations, just like Stan Dobbs, he's working with the people that are out to make a buck in this. He's not talking to church people. You know, he is on the side, but his main focus is working with the industry, and the industry is wide open. And I'm praying that I can get in with the industry and spirituality and talk about how it impacts your multi-housing site. Another indicator where God's at work is this is huge, because immigrants, all people groups that we're trying to reach as God brings the world to us in North America, where do they live? Multi-housing. By and large, multi-housing. And God's going to do something through those folks. Despite church decline, alternative forms of worship are growing significantly. Now, I was looking for a quote to come out of the book Revolution. If you've ever read that book, it's pretty controversial. Because he almost goes to the point of saying that the traditional church I mentioned before is going to go by the wayside. And these alternative phone churches, workplace churches, coffee house, multi-housing, this kind of house church is going to be the wave of the future. And it may well be right. But not getting into that debate here in this setting, let me just tell you, I believe that alternative forms of the church, and you know what's so sad about this? When you get back to the book of Acts, how did they do it? They met in a house. It's house church. And they didn't have buildings. They didn't have programs and facilities and all the things we had. They had relationships. It was relationally. So, you know, that's just a reality, and we need to see that that's where we're at. Priority of prayer. For readiness, if you're going to prepare the field, it's got to begin with prayer. And the harvest plentiful, the key is asking the Lord. And the Lord is the Lord of the harvest. It's His harvest. I just love this picture. That gets it, doesn't it? Man, there is San Diego, Miami, San Francisco, all over. Multi-housing is larger than life. And it's all under our nose, and we don't see it. We don't see it. And we've got to see it. We've got to hear it. And this is what it's all about. Life's changed. People come to know Christ. This is actual baptism and multi-housing site and one of their swim pools. Fields are ready. Are you ready? Now, I'd like for you to kind of cluster up in groups of three. And we're going to do this every time. This is kind of be our format at the end of my time in each process before we take a break. And we're about ready for a break. And I don't know, JD, how we want to do this. If we want to just have a stand-up break sometimes, or you want to, how do you do? Okay, good. But let's be real prompt about it so we can get right back. Because I had the hardest time condensing this all down to 4 hours. You know, it's like you do in your seminary work. It's like these professors want you to get it succinct, concise, and the hard time on that end. So I guess I can say a lot, but I'd like for you to cluster up in groups of three, at least three. And talk about what has God revealed to you about the readiness of your setting, where you're at, your context, for multi-housing church planning. Based on what you've heard, do you have an eye-opener about the sheer numbers of multi-housing? About prayer? What is there something that God just grabbed you with here? Because I'm not here to dump a bunch of stuff on you. I want you to encounter God and interact with God here and hear from God and listen to this from that perspective. What does God want to do? Because if we just come in here and just talk, do that and I'm done, then we've not accomplished anything. But if you come out of here with, I've heard this from God today and I need to do something about the readiness of the field of responsibility God's given me, or in my life as I'm a student here, how do I prepare myself, or what do I need to do now that I've heard this? So groups of three, just going to give you 2 or 3 minutes, not very much time at all, but nail it down, just and let's let this simmer throughout the day, but let's talk for 2 or 3 minutes, and then we'll gather back together and break, okay? So go for it, okay? So whatever's easiest, turn around wherever you're at. Introduce yourself, too.